to Political Misfits on Radio Sputnik, where we bring you news, politics, and culture without the red and blue treatment. I'm Michelle Witte. I'm here with John Kiriakou. And as promised, we are talking about the disappearing Mississippi River, at least temporarily disappearing, and then at times emerging in much too large a format. But the disappearing Mississippi River and the disappearing Alaskan snow crabs. Which, are related somewhat.
They have to be.
But being treated very differently in the press. Joining us for these two distinct conversations is Guy McPherson. He's a scientist. He's professor emeritus of natural resources and ecology and evolutionary biology at the University of Arizona. Guy, good to have you back.
Thanks, Michelle. It's good to talk with you again.
Let's start with the Mississippi. It is a huge river, right? So water levels are not going to be the same all along its length, but it is at lows not seen in decades in some places. In at least one, it is breaking records outside of Memphis, Tennessee for lowest water level. And so I wonder if you can talk to us about what is happening, because obviously some fluctuation is normal, but I'm wondering if there is something else afoot here, especially because the U.S. West is in the grip of this mega drought.
Well, thanks to both of you for this very timely story, and thank you for putting up with my struggle as I fight through this bad cold I have.
Oh, you and me both, man.
Oh, it's terrible.
As most of us know, great civilizations arise along rivers, and as the rivers go, so go the civilizations. I'd like to start with a story that appeared in the Wall Street Journal 6 days ago, October 14th, 2022. The headline reads, Drying Mississippi River Threatens U.S. Supply Change.
Yes.
The take-home message is contained within a single quote, in this case from Mike Ellis, CEO of American Commercial Barge Line in Indiana, quote, America is going to shut down if we shut down. And this line is reminiscent of the bumper stickers seen on trucks throughout the United States since the 1970s. Without trucks, America stops. Dozens of stories indicate the dire nature of the situation with respect to the Mississippi River. The Mississippi River Basin produces more than 90% of U.S. agricultural exports and nearly 80% of the world's grain exports.
Wow.
That's huge. The river itself is a major means of transporting all kinds of materials. What's happening in the Mississippi River is also happening in Italy's Po River, as we talked about earlier on this show, and also several other places around the world. You don't need to look very far before you can find additional examples. Now, with respect to the question about whether the situation is normal or not, consider that earlier this year, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, predicted that the 22-year mega drought affecting the West would not only intensify, but also would move eastward. And that prediction appears to be coming into fruition, with about 82% of the continental U.S. currently showing conditions between abnormally dry and exceptional drought, according to the U.S. Drought Monitor. Obviously, this should come as no surprise. After all, we're in the midst of a mass extinction event underlain by abrupt, irreversible climate change. Even the political body trying to pass itself off as a scientific organization, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, concluded that climate change is abrupt and irreversible with two reports in 2018 and 2019, respectively. And specifically, in its October 8, 2018 report, Global Warming of 1.5 Degrees, the IPCC included this line, citing the peer-reviewed literature, quote, these global-level rates of change far exceed the rates of change driven by geophysical or biosphere forces that have altered the Earth's system trajectory in the past. Even abrupt geophysical events do not approach current rates of human-driven change, end quote. In other words, the IPCC admitted more than 4 years ago that Earth is in the midst of the most rapid environmental change in planetary history. Vertebrates and mammals are unable to keep up with ongoing and projected rates of change. As vertebrate mammals, I cannot see a way for humans to avoid joining the casualties resulting from the ongoing mass extinction event. I just don't see a way around it. And the Mississippi River, in this case, is a harbinger of the world and of what's to come.
It's interesting to me because, you know, the mega drought in the West, it's been underway for some time. The Colorado River and the reservoirs at Lake Mead and Lake Powell have been shrinking for some time. And it seems like the, you know, there every once in a while there will be a spate of articles about it and some hand-wringing, especially when, you know, the time for water allotment comes around. But it is I guess it's not surprising that it is framed as more of a, oh gosh, this is a sort of water problem. Whereas what's happening in the Mississippi is, as you know, began your response by saying, it's being termed a business issue. You know, it's a transport issue. It's a supply chain issue. And I was going to ask if you think, maybe this is East Coast bias, but it seems like the Mississippi is maybe the most sort of culturally resonant river in the United States, right? The Colorado is very important, but the Mississippi, as you said, the Mississippi Basin provides 80% of the world's grain. 41 of the 48 contiguous states of the U.S. drain into it. Like, it's a major thing. And yet, I don't know, it doesn't seem to be getting a ton of attention. And the attention it's getting is like, oh, yeah, it sure is a shame we have these barges waiting. So do you think that, I don't know, do you think that this is, we have to wait for this phenomenon to continue for a while for it to get some attention? What's going on? Why is this not a bigger story?
Yeah, that's a good question. In general, a warmer Earth is a wetter Earth. Heating causes evaporation. What goes up must come down. But there's a lot of variation among locations, and climate change tends to cause a redistribution of precipitation rather than simply causing more precipitation. So some areas get much wetter while others get drier. And that's what we're seeing in certain places along the Mississippi River. One of the recent drivers of increased precipitation in local areas is the smoke from large fires in the western U.S. And smoke contributes particulates that allow for the formation of precipitation as the smoke in the atmosphere moves east. So I think that's one of the reasons we're seeing increased precipitation in some places at the same time as we're seeing drought afflicting much of the continental United States and the continental North America for that matter.
Yeah, because I think it's hard for people to get their head around sometimes that, flooding and drought can exist almost simultaneously, and our infrastructure is really built for neither.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Yeah. The other story I wanted to ask about, we didn't get a chance to talk about this last week, but the cancellation of Alaska's winter snow crab season and the mystery of all where all the crabs have gone or why all the crabs have gone, which is probably the more important question. So last week, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game canceled the snow crab season in the Bering Sea for the first time in history. The department said the population of snow crabs had dropped by nearly 90% from 2018 to 2021. Plunging from 8 billion to 1 billion. State officials also closed the fall red king crab harvest for the second year in a row, citing a low number of mature female crabs. And NOAA Fisheries, said the declines were likely the result of climate change, which had forced more fish species to move in search of cooler waters. And so this is like, oh, where are the crabs? Did they die? No, they just went somewhere colder. This information is coming from a story by the Green Wire News Service. And I wanted to ask, because warming oceans seem to be a given, but there are also a lot of questions being raised about how crab harvests have been managed over the past decade. And just last year, a NOAA whistleblower came forward and said the agency had for 40 years misclassified fish deaths and pushed this idea of natural mortality events to cover for the fact that they were just overfishing these already dwindling populations, which really looks like climate change being used to cover for unsustainable industry practices. And I wanted to ask what you make of this whole crab episode.
Well, yeah, I'm sure there's a lot to that. A warming ocean is almost certainly an important factor. So too is an acidifying ocean. It doesn't require much change in the environment to destroy habitat for any species, including crabs. I suspect over-harvesting, driven by the bottom line, has been and remains a major factor in this case. After all, we all know about cases in which the lack of regulations or a toothless regulatory agency make it almost impossible to do the right thing for future generations. You could argue that that's a one-sentence summary of the long, tawdry story of disaster capitalism, with the U.S. leading the way, right? The toothless regulatory agencies and the lack of regulations, it makes it almost impossible to do the right thing for future generations. Mm-hmm. So I'm not terribly surprised, but it's very disappointing. You know, we go back at least a century in the United States to what I've been calling disaster capitalism, I have yet to be convinced that capitalism, at least the version with which we are familiar, is consistent with sustainability in any money-making endeavor. Yeah. Sustainability means forever, after all. In the case of the Iroquois Confederacy, no decision of significance was made without considering the impact 7 generations into the future. But we haven't been following that model since we essentially destroyed indigenous life in this country. And forever is a very long time relative to our short lives, much less relative to quarterly profits. And so, you know, I think money just keeps getting in the way of doing what we very frequently know is the right thing.
It almost feels like, I wonder a little bit about the psychological effect of this, that, you know, there is such a thing as sustainable harvesting, right? There is, you can actually figure out what is a level that you can take from, you know, the bounty of the land and the bounty of the oceans. But I kind of feel like it is possible that we are seeing a sort of PR effort to push the idea that there's actually no safe level of harvesting. So it's either all or nothing. And might as well be all. I don't know. I wonder if this is kind of, if it's not the intention of this apparent or alleged 4-decade practice of deceit by Noah. It seems like it might be the effect of it for people to just sort of throw their hands up and go, turns out human beings can't fish. Inevitably, we fish all of them and the oceans die. And I feel like that inevitably isn't inevitable.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, this is what we do. There's going to be 8 billion of us, according to projections, in the middle of next month. So not long from now, there's going to be 8 billion people on the planet. How do we do anything sustainably with 8 billion and rising on a finite planet? And we certainly have not set very many good examples of sustainable practices. It seems that, as usual, the money is getting in the way of what we very frequently know is the right thing to do. I just, it's everywhere. It's not just with crabs, it's not just with fish, it's not just with the ocean, although because life arose in the ocean, we should be a little bit concerned about what goes on there. It's everywhere. It's deer, it's elk, it's bear, it's every species that I've come across in my short lifetime.
Yeah. 8 billion people in the middle of next month. That's when we're going to hit it. And 8 billion people with less livable land, right? I mean, there's a lot of conversation about parts of the Middle East and South Asia becoming basically unlivable for human beings pretty soon. So, yeah, I mean, Guy, I suspect you would say, you know, certainly that would lead to intense conflict just over living space, except we probably won't be on the planet long enough for that to occur. Am I right?
No, I think the conflict is already underway. I think we're witnessing World War III in Ukraine and Russia. And, you know, it probably hasn't affected your life and my life very much because we're in this relatively protected Caucasian people bubble in the United States. But I can promise you that the events that are occurring in other places in the world are having great impact, are being greatly felt by people elsewhere. It's the same old tragic story of, well, the Carter administration comes to mind. That's our oil over there with respect to the Middle East. And by extension, that's our everything everywhere. And we're going to get it no matter what it takes. So it's dismal, but what else would you come to me for if not for dismal information?
No, yeah, we know what we're getting with you, Guy. But, you know, I mean, I think it is bizarre to slowly watch river levels drop and go, gosh, this is inconvenient. But it's, you know, the thing that is driving these forces is such an enormous thing that it can feel, you know, if you do think, as I think, you know, the sort of capitalist system and the way that it has overtaken the world is what is driving these situations. It can seem just incredibly hard to take on. And so what are you going to do but stand on the banks and watch?
Right. You know, we've long known that the central portion of large continents tend to dry out during mass extinction events that result from planetary heating. And this case appears to be following the customary trend. It's just getting drier in the central parts of North America and getting wetter, at least near the oceans, on the edges. All that information should be telling us that we're screwed, that we should pursue excellence and adventure in our short individual lives. But what it's actually telling most people is we need to hope more, or reduce emissions more, or rely upon somebody else to fix the situation. And none of that is going to help, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I'm going to get into the idea of pursuing excellence and adventure. I think that sounds pretty fun. Guy McPherson, always great to talk to, genuinely great to talk to you, even if the tone of the conversation is pretty somber. That was scientist, Professor Guy McPherson. Thanks as always, Guy.
Thanks, Michelle and John. I appreciate it.